Don't give me that good bullshit.
And welcome to another edition of your Economic Forum entitled Money Matters. Your host, Mark Cunabrody, thanks for joining me. And remember, discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Keep in mind, indices that I may mention are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Investing involves risk. Depending on the types of investments, there may be varying degrees of risk. Investors should be prepared to bear loss, including total loss of principal. The views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station, its staff, members, or underwriters, or Cambridge. Welcome to show number 280. Is it over? January 3rd, 2019, year of our Lord. Thanks for joining me. This show is about money. As money does matter, and matters of money affects us all in some way or another. Whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it, it controls our economy, our country, our planet in some way or another, controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it. It's about your lives and livelihood. In short, it's about you. Okay. Is it over?
Well, I don't know. Some thought it was over.
You know, here we are. 22,768. Now, we've mentioned every show that these large numbers, some technical analysts look at as resistance and support. So what does that mean? 22,768 is the Dow. It's the most watched index, I can comfortably say. 22,768. So a major support and resistance. A major resistance level would now be the big number above it. Since we are at 22,768, the biggest number above it is 23,000. That is a resistance level now because we fell below it. Below us, 22,000, since we're at 22,768, 22,000 would be a support level. Now, technical analysis tells us nothing is for sure. It's theories. There are many technical analysts that believe that support and resistance levels show on charts where the market may go up or down in the future. So it would depend, knowing some technical analysis like I do, that if it closes below 22,000, I mean, if it closes below 23,000, which is roughly 232 points above us, then that would not be as, we would not regard 23,000 above us as a resistance level. So it's got to close into 22,000s. So in October, obviously, what happened is, it just started to come apart. October 1st just started to come apart. Now, fall can be the time for stock market falls, and last year it wasn't. And in 16, I don't think it was, November of 16, when Trump got elected, the markets ran. Although, obviously, this October was brutal. And it started to kind of recover. Late October, if I believe. Let me bring up a chart of the Dow. So it started to recover. Now, this is from my memory, okay? So it started to recover. It started brutally October, right around October 1st. That's when the start began. I mean, right around there it started. And it started to recover right around October 29th. So the Dow started at 26,773, October 2nd. And October 29th, it bottomed out temporarily, as we now know, looking in the rearview mirror. It bottomed out at 24,442 and took off. And took off to 26,180. Where it hit November 7th. And then if my memory serves me right, a company that supplies to Apple came out with some bad financials, not very encouraging. And as a result, it started to fall again. And in November, see if I can get my scroller on here, November 23rd, it hit 24,285, and then it popped up to 25,826. And then since December 3rd all the way until December 24th, Christmas Eve, it ended up at 21,000,
792. So pretty brutal correction. And then as before, it started to recover again, I think day after Christmas, to 23,346, and now it looked to be headed down again. Now, the catalyst for today sell-off is after hours yesterday. A large phone manufacturer, mobile phone manufacturer, came out with rather dismal prognostication on its sales. And down it went, and the Dow started down overnight and has continued down 618. Okay. Now, if I was to look at a chart for this, since October 3rd, the Dow, in my opinion, looks to be in a technical downtrend. And nothing that I've seen here would indicate, at least technically, that this thing could turn. Now, that being said, it could turn. It's got just as much chance as turning now. Am I concerned now? I can tell you that between October 1st and Christmas Eve, I was concerned. And we exercised, as approved by the regulators, for me to say, and exercised, and as stated on the show, as the market fell, initiating stops, which means as the market falls, you start to unload stock positions. And then as the market falls more, you unload more stock positions, which makes the portfolio go to more cash. And as the portfolio goes for more cash, it slows its descent. That doesn't mean it will stop its descent if you still hold equities of any type, of any proportion. Obviously, if you held all cash, it wouldn't go anywhere. But it's rare, I think, for most advisors and myself to go to an all-cash position, although I have done that in the past. And so now, with this latest blip with this large mobile phone manufacturer, I can say that, in my opinion, I am not too or as concerned. Now, this is not a recommendation to buy or sell anything. Remember, this is my opinion only. It does not reflect those of this station or my firm or anything. This is just my firm. I just don't have the big pit in my stomach that I had as we came through October and November. So that being said, if those of you believe that the route may be over, and we had a fairly significant correction, right? 26 to 21. So that's 5,000 points of a market that was 25,000. So that's a 20% correction, at least in the Dow. Now, the other indexes obviously move differently. Every index moves differently. And so, it's accelerating as we go into the close at 642 now. But I will tell you that not everything goes down in any market down. Okay? It's comfortable to say that there's green. And the way I preface this is that when you see the market fall and we get a call, why is it falling? The reason it's falling is because there's more sellers than buyers. That's why stocks fall. And when stocks rise, they're more buyer than sellers. That's what happens. Now, I've always said that the market will reflect reality, economic reality eventually. But it's day-to-day movements, and one could maybe say it's month-to-month movements or week-to-week movements are only the movements as a result of the perception of all the players in the market at that given time. So, I mean, a good example would be when the housing market started to come apart in 2008 and 2009. There were days when the housing stocks rose. And I remember particularly on one particular day, one of the housing stocks rose a lot. Now, housing was already in trouble. Bear Stearns had two funds that went 4 feet up. 4 feet up is what my kids used to say when they would see a dead skunk or a mouse, and they couldn't really, they didn't know what dead was, so they'd say it was a rat downstairs with 4 feet up. Okay, 4 feet up means dead. And so in that particular case, the housing, some housing stocks, one particular that I remember was rising, even though the housing market was coming apart. So this particular stock did not reflect the reality of the situation. It only reflected the reality of the perception of all the players in the market that were buying the stock. There were more buyers than sellers. Now, housing stocks eventually reflected the reality of the problem, obviously, and then it bled on into world markets and into bonds, and it was just, you know, a cluster. Rescued, some believe, and I believe, by the Federal Reserve's easy money policies of lowering interest rates to emergency rates of near zero, and $5 trillion worth of bailout money and another guarantee of $5 to $7 trillion. Those are pretty much verified figures. So the Federal Reserve bought up mortgages and bought up all sorts of stuff and adds to its balance sheet. So when you hear about the Fed's balance sheet exploding, you'll say, well, the Fed's balance sheet has exploded. You would think, oh, that means they have more cash. Not necessarily. When the Fed's balance sheet explodes, I kind of liken it to if I have a lot of money on the block and I want to help my block out, and all the guys are going broke on the block and they hold garage sales and they're selling all this stuff that nobody wants, in this particular case, home mortgages, I come along as the Federal Reserve of my block and I buy up all the junk, all the home mortgages. Not necessarily junk, my opinion. So the Federal Reserve came up and bought a lot of home mortgages and bought a lot of bonds, and they warehouse these, and that's their balance sheet. So their balance sheet is just a big warehouse with all the stuff they have in it. Now, normally, it ran between $700 and $9 billion of stuff. A lot of it was treasury bills. They buy treasury bills so the government can spend money, and they buy some other particular assets. But when 08 and 09 came along, the Fed's balance sheet ballooned. It's a common belief, common valid statement. It ballooned a couple of trillion dollars, and the Fed's balance sheet ballooned, and what was in it was a lot of mortgage-backed securities, home loans. Now, the Fed has been unwinding those. Now, unwinding means it's trying to sell those off. Most importantly, it's really not selling them off, per se, most of them. They're letting them expire, because as you go, when you buy mortgages, you know, some people come to the end of the mortgage and it's done. You've paid your house off. So the Federal Reserve is letting those expire. Now, in the crisis, when mortgages expired, they would go out and buy more with the money they got. And so now they're just letting them expire. Now, that is believed by some to be putting pressure on the market, because when the Feds were buying stuff, they were buying these things from the banking system, most for the most part, and from the federal-sponsored home agencies, Freddie Mac. And when that happens, when the Fed buys these things, it gives them money, and that money goes into the system. So when money goes into the system, it's generally believed that some of the money finds its way into the stock market. So when the Fed is letting these mortgages expire, it is, the money is not going back into the system. In fact, it's taking money out of the system. And so when you take money out of the system, it can generally lead sometimes to the market falling. There are other things that are happening in the market. From the five-minute forecast, okay, five-minute forecast, Essential Insights on Time, they're put out by Agora Financial. So they're saying 2019, the concerns going forward, now there are positives going forward too. A lot of the economic stats are very positive, but there are concerns that Agora Financial has put out. This particular publication is put out on January 2nd, 2019 at 12:33 p.m. Pacific when I got it, and they have listed the following. The U.S.-China trade war. Will the two sides make peace, or will the leadership of the two countries dig in their heels for domestic political reasons? President Trump and Chinese President Xi Jinping. I don't think I pronounced that right. I do not speak Chinese. I know a few Chinese words. Both of those gentlemen are using the trade war to appeal to their domestic constituents. So as we have seen with the border wall issue,
President Trump likes to posture for his supporters. Anti-Chinese sentiment is strong amongst those supporters. Perhaps, as Agora Financial puts forth, markets are worried that Trump feels he has more to gain politically from fighting with China than from making a sensible deal. Agora Financial also says, coming into this year, U.S. political instability, to put it mildly. On January 2nd was the first business day of the year. Obviously, the first was a holiday, and already headlines were dominated by a complete breakdown on the most basic process of government, paying the bills, the holdout, the shutdown. Again, powerful institutional investors are surely aware that the Democrats in charge of the House, that the Democrats are in charge of the House, Trump will have many reasons to dig in his heels in order to prove his supporters that he is living up to their expectations. Nancy Pelosi was elected House Speaker this morning, and I put out on social media, Trump as president, Pelosi as House Speaker. We are not doomed in either case. Not one person can make or break this great nation. I support and I fully believe in this great nation. And I don't believe one person can really do that much damage. Obviously, if they pushed a button, they could. So I've always told clients, Trump can't do that much. He can, but he really can't. I think the people in control of the banking system may have something to say about it. Also a concern into 2019, investigations of the president. Like them or not, the various investigations of the president, people close to him and his businesses, will continue. The investigations will continue. They will probably reach a crescendo, so says Agora Financial, in 2019 this year. The president has a habit of deflecting bad news with sudden policy announcements. Markets are surely concerned that these type of unanticipated changes will increase as the year goes on. Basically, he's saying if he gets into trouble, he's going to be deflecting, moving the spotlight stage left or stage right. Instability in Europe, another challenge into the year. The Brexit process, which we've covered in many shows, the show's been out since 2005, so I've been on the air for 14 years. Brexit, Britain exiting the euro. It now seems obvious that Britain will not have a finalized agreement with the European Union on March 29th, which is the deadline. And I told you that the Brexit was not going to be smooth and probably not going to be on time. Will Britain ask for an extension? If so, they will use it to extend negotiations or to hold another referendum, another vote? Nobody knows. Interest rates. That's been another problem. Federal Reserve has signaled that it might slow down the pace of its interest rates and increases in 2019. I think that was done in response for the market fall, my opinion. But then again, the Feds may not slow. After all, the Feds need higher rates as ammunition to fight any potential recession in the new year. In other words, you're sick. We gave you antibiotics. You're getting better. We're going to withdraw the antibiotics so you don't become immune to the antibiotics so we can use them again. Do I believe in monetary policy to fix an economic situation? Myself? No. It must, however, think about the flack that it's getting from the president and also about this immediate state of the economy. Fed Chairman Jerome Powell has signaled that he doesn't see supporting high stock market prices as part of the Fed's job. I think I believe that. Now, that not necessarily might be good for the market, but I would agree with that statement. Now, I will also say that Agora Financial has not brought up in some of the challenges that we face is the tariffs. The tariffs. You know, I think this large phone manufacturer that put out this news yesterday did mention in their statement, tariffs were hurting the sales. And we know that tariffs hurt sales. They hurt exports and they hurt imports because everybody puts a tariff in response. It's a, you know, we've talked about currency wars before. This is also a tariff war. You put a tariff on my goods, I will put a tariff on yours. So Dow's down 630. We'll keep an eye on it for you. Now, I said there are some greens. Now, when the market sells off, the money comes out of the market. Big pension plans and hedge funds and banks and broker-dealers, which are large stock buyers and people that manage money when they sell off stocks because they panic or they just sell off stocks, they get money for the stocks, right? If IBM or another company, company AYZ or the millions of companies that are out there, I'm not singling out IBM by any means. If a certain stock falls and I exercise a stop in prudent money management, in my opinion, then I sell it. Now, when I sell it, I get money. Now, what do I do with the money?
Well, as an advisor, I can park it in a money market fund. And they're usually insured up to a particular aggregate amount, which is listed on the broker-dealer's disclosures. However, you get a large pension plan, he sells off $1 billion worth of stock, he can't go put it in a bank, a CD, because you have FDIC insurance that has a limit. So they have to put it somewhere. Now, where do they put it? Well, nobody knows where they will put it, but I can tell you where they have put it in the past. They have sometimes bought short-term treasury bills. They have sometimes bought utilities stocks. They have sometimes bought mortgage-backed securities, preferred stocks, bonds, some of the things that we call fixed income. So a general, the old market theory was you buy stocks and bonds as a balance, because if stocks go down, bonds are generally thought to rise, because one goes to the other. One, you sell out stocks, you buy bonds, you sell out bonds, you buy stocks. Now, that did not hold true in 08. We saw a mass fire sale of many assets. And the last standing asset was, of course, Treasury bill. People believe, and it's rightly safe for me to say, that U.S. government guaranteed investments that are like real short term are fairly safe, regarded as safe. And a U.S. CD in a U.S. bank, FDIC insured, is safe as far as the nominal value is concerned. Put $100,000 into a savings account, FDIC insured, and you have $100,000 no matter what happens. I'm not telling you what the $100,000 will buy 10 years from now. So the purchasing power may change, but the nominal value, the number on your statement, won't change. So today, there's no exception. There are some greens. Now, I will tell you, in the fall of 08, 09, I think it was 08, in the teeth of the crisis, when Brian Williams came on and said, incredibly, Citibank is near the brink. Then, not now, then, we saw almost a complete fire sale of all assets across the board. I mean, one time in August, I saw a complete red board, almost completely red. And I called a buddy of mine and I said, you know, I'm seeing a complete red board. He goes, yeah, I know, it's a fire sale of everything on the planet. And so, and it was. Everybody was selling everything. There was no safe harbor except savings and CDs. So there are greens, and if this market upset is making you vomitous or anxious or lose sleep or wringing your hands, the common step, the belief, would be to go to a higher cash position. I've had people say, sell it all. I myself, in my opinion, don't believe that is prudent. But I will not question a client's instructions. I will debate them, but not question. And so if these things are making you nervous and you're seeing balances drop, maybe you're seeing profits minimized or breaking back even again, or even profits destroyed and you're into the negative 2 years later, going to a more cash position as the market falls might be something you would consider. When the market turns, if it turns, when it turns, easing back in would be the same thing. You can't just say, well, it's going down, I'm selling it all, and now it's going up, I'm buying back in. Oh, I don't think that's prudent. My position is, my opinion is, my practice is, when the market starts to fall, I slowly unload, slowing the velocity. And when the market turns, and I think it's going to turn, I slowly add. So if I'm wrong, it turns back down again. We didn't overcommit. And another thing is, as you sell out, as the market goes down, you have more dry powder to buy things at lower levels. For instance, I've talked about and have been a fan of dividend-paying stocks. Now, I have to tell you, the regulators require that I say dividends are not guaranteed against losses, and some dividends will be taxable in particular accounts. And dividends are never guaranteed. They can be stopped, increased, or decreased at any time. But dividends work like this. If you have a $10 stock and a dividend is given in dollars, so they basically say, hi, I've got a stock for $10. If you buy a share, we are scheduled to pay, not promise, scheduled to pay a dollar a year, maybe 25 cents a quarter. So if I buy a $10 stock and they have scheduled a dollar a year, 25 cents a quarter, every 3 months, if they live up to their promises, then I get a dollar on $10 and I make 10%. Now, let's say this nasty rout comes about and the stock drops to $8. If the company maintains its dollar dividend and you paid $8 for it, you no longer earn 10%. You earn 12.5, if my math is right. So there is a bright spot in everything. People say, well, how can there be a bright spot in the market getting destroyed? Well, the bright spot is that the yields on dividend-paying stocks, if they pay and don't decrease the dividend, will be higher. So you get more for your buck. I will tell you that there are companies that have paid dividends for decades, some more than a century. And there are some stocks that have continued to increase their dividend for years. And there are some companies that have increased their dividends right through the teeth of the crisis. Wow. Who are they? Right? So it is not bleak. In fact, when the market got completely destroyed, I woke up one morning and I thought, this is kind of exciting. This is kind of an opportunity to pick up some great stocks paying higher yields. And sure, maybe the market continues down. But that means if I get paid a dividend on a stock and the market falls, and I use a dividend reinvestment program, a DRIP, basically I've told the company or my broker, if I get paid a dividend in cash, please turn around and buy more stock. Dividend reinvestment into the security that I hold. So if the market continues to fall and my dividends are paid, I use the cash to buy more stock, I'm getting even higher yields on the stock that I buy at a lower level. So there are bright spots in all of this. There are bright spots in all of this. The other thing is, if we have a higher cash position and the market is now at 22,778, where it is at the second, and it was at 26,700 or something, we're going to be able to buy more stock with the dry powder that we have. So these things are, there are bright spots in everything, and we have to look for those. It's not all doom and gloom. From Greg Guthner, he's from The Rude Awakening, put out by Seven Figure Publishing. I favor Greg. I like him. I can't recommend him because I'm not allowed to recommend anybody. But I can tell you, in my opinion, I like what he writes. He writes, and he's actually got a pretty good sense of humor. Looks like a pretty young guy, Greg Guthner. He always starts out his newsletters. Greg Guthner, coming to you from Baltimore, Maryland. Just something about him I really like. Greg says, your stock market losses from December were due to nothing more than a little glitch, President Trump explained during a Wednesday cabinet meeting. Once the U.S. seals a new trade deal with China, Trump assures us the market will resume its upward trajectory, possibly with a little, quote, help, unquote, from the Fed. Like so many investors, Trump is frantically trying to explain away the 2018 meltdown. But the market offers no refunds, even for little glitches like the one we endured last month. Looking back on 2008, so says Greg Guthner, investors had nowhere to run. Our income specialist Mike Burnick notes, 2019 is bound to be different in one of two ways, Mike says. Considering the high level of political, economic, and monetary policy uncertainty in 2018, something's got to give in the year ahead. Either our worst fears will show themselves as overblown with 2019 delivering bigger gains than you can imagine, Mike continues, or we're headed for a global recession and steeper bear market decline. It's going to go one way or the other. Okay. In other words, 2019 is likely to be a binary outcome for financial markets. One way or the other, it's winner take all. Fortunately for most investors, Mike's money is firmly in the bull camp. Now, that's his opinion. Okay, not a recommendation to buy or sell. We're giving an opinion only. That's enough with the 2018 postmortems for now, so says Greg Guthner. Let's check out what the market's doing right now. Back in the real world, the stock market did post an impressive rally to begin the new year, although I wouldn't ascribe any of it to the day's political posturing. After opening deep in the red, the averages clawed back from the brink, sneaking into positive territory by midday on the second, before chopping around near their highs and barely closing in the green. The NASDAQ composite blazed the trail with a gain of almost 0.5%, led by semiconductors and resurging tech leaders, of which I will not name. But as were experienced too far often during the correction, Major market moving news can slam stocks after the bell. So it happened. After the bell last night, bell closed. This large mobile phone manufacturer listed global slowdowns. And I read the letter from the CEO. It was rather dire. I would not have used that language that he used, but he did. The CEO of this company alerted shareholders that the company would report lower than expected holiday sales numbers due in part to slowing phone sales and economic deceleration in China. Gee, I wonder if the word tariff has anything to do with that. The biggest issue was lower phone sales in China with a slowing economy has been hit by the continuing trade war with the U.S., so said MarketWatch. But it also noted issues with phone sales in some developed countries where phone upgrades were not as strong as the company expected. The stock was halted on the news when it reopened. Shares slid 8%, a little bit down, a little bit more now. And, of course, that also dragged down shares in more than a handful of chip makers and other key suppliers. A Wed Bush, Wed, W-E-D, B-U-S-H analyst, one of more than a handful who immediately cut the stock's price target, called the forecast the darkest day in phone era. So there you go. The entire stock market is reeling in the wake of this news. Futures are in the gutter once again this morning and threaten to open near Wednesday's lows. And so that was this morning. No word they noticed from the Trump gang on whether this is just another market glitch. Okay. Before the news did hit the market, after markets, some of last year's biggest losers awakened from their slumber. Okay. So there you go. So is it over? You know, I can't tell you that. Nobody can tell you that. The market's sitting down 616. Let's take a look at some of the other indexes for you. The 52-week range on the Dow is 21,712. So we're very close to the 52-week range. At 22,730, we're about, 500 points away? No, I'm sorry. 28 points away. Oh, it was 21,712, 52-week range. So we're about 1,000 points away from the low in 52 weeks. High being 26,951. So there you go. As I mentioned, there are some green things on the board. I won't mention what those are. Regulators kind of get a little squirrely. NASDAQ down 183, down 2.75%. Dow's down about 2.72%, S&P down 2.36%, the Russell down 1%. And crude oil up 1.1%. So you can see, you know, when I said there are some greens, well, crude oil's up. Now, that's not a recommendation to buy crude oil. I'm just noting it's up. And so why? I don't know. I'd mentioned a couple of things that I'd noticed we are seeing some signs of inflation, some signs. Now, I call it asset-specific inflation. I expected more inflation from 2009 and 2010, the Fed flooding money into the economy. I personally expected more inflation. Here's why it didn't happen, in my opinion. And I always use examples. Suppose I'm in a room and I have a Rolex watch worth $3,000. And I lock the door of the room. And now the room is full of people. And I give each person $1,000. Okay? And the locked room is now our economy. It could be a global economy, a small country, the United States, whatever it is. Let's just say it's the United States. And I say, okay, let's bid for the watch. Well, because everybody has $1,000. And we assume nobody can combine money together for the example. My highest bid for that watch would be $1,000, right? Now, I stop the bidding and I run around and I give everybody $3,000 more. So everybody had $1,000 and I give them $3,000 more and they have $4,000. Now what's my highest bid? My highest bid could be $4,000. So basically, I have introduced more money into the system and bidding prices have risen. So, the Fed introduces $5 trillion into the economy. Now, did prices rise? asset specific. Some did, but a lot didn't. Now, what did rise from 2009 and 2010? The stock market went from 6,500 to 26,000 today, or 25,000. So the stock market rose. So the money went, some money went there. But where else didn't it go? Well, $5 trillion went into the banking system and other systems. Big monetary systems didn't go into your system, but went into systems. And what happened to the money that didn't make inflation take off rampant? You would think $5 trillion, you know, that's one-third the GDP of the nation in 1 year. Where'd it go? Well, some of it, what happens is the Fed gives them this money for their mortgage-backed securities, hoping that the banks will lend. Remember when they used to say, we got to get the banks lending again? They said that in 10, 2011, 2012. We got to get the banks lending again. Well, they had $5 trillion. Why weren't they lending? Well, they probably saw risk. They didn't believe that you were without risk, so they didn't want to lend to you. So what the feds did is the feds have a policy called excess reserves. And they basically go to the banks and they say, look, if you got extra money that you want to park, you give it back to us. So instead of buying stocks or loaning it out or whatever they did, obviously some stocks were bought. Stock market ran like crazy. They turned around and they gave it back to the feds. And the feds pay interest on the money back. Kind of a sweet deal if you can get it. Let me repeat that. Federal Reserve buys mortgage-backed securities or other assets from the banking system, hoping they'll lend it out. But they give the banks the option. We will give you the money, and if you give it back to us to park for you, we will pay you interest. Well, who wouldn't take money? You come to me and you say, here, I'll give you $1 trillion. Give it back to me. I'll pay 0.25%. I'll say, give me $10 trillion, right? Because the money is safe with the Fed. So the policy on excess reserves, I always wondered through 10 and 11 or 12, when they said, let's get the banks lending again. Everybody was saying at 13, 14, we've got to get the banks lending again. I'd say, if you want to get the banks lending again, why are you paying interest on excess reserves? You should penalize them. You park the money back at the Fed, we're going to charge you 0.25%. But no, they pay interest on excess reserves. So in my opinion, it was a bailout, two bailouts. It's like General Motors, okay? Not a recommendation to buy or sell General Motors. Just saying, when the crisis came, General Motors was in trouble. So the feds usurped the bondholders. Basically, that meant the bondholders should get paid before the shareholders, company, employees. But the feds came in and said, no. We're going to screw the bondholders, and we're going to rescue the company and pay the shareholders and pay the employees. Some people say, great, employees should be paid. Whatever your opinion is, fine. So they usurped government, they usurped business law. That, in my opinion, is terrible. You know, when you have a bond, you bought a bond that says, I get paid before you do. That's the way the country is run, that capitalism runs. And then you go back on your word. What good is a piece of paper? If the government come in and say, your contract is no longer valid. But then what they did is they loaned General Motors $25 billion, became a shareholder of General Motors, and then they gave them $25 billion to make fuel-efficient cars. Well, that's General Motors' job anyway, right? It's like them coming to me and saying, you know, I'm a pie maker, and the government comes in and say, ah, I'm going to give you $1 billion to make good-tasting pies. So that, in my opinion, was not a clandestine bailout. That was an overt bailout. But, well, you put a good name on it to make fuel-efficient cars, and half the country says, well, that's good. We should loan them $25 billion and give them $25 billion to make fuel-efficient cars. Well, if you're going to adopt that particular stance, that particular opinion, then any company that makes something good should be given money. But see, I have a real problem with the government selecting who gets money for free and who doesn't. That's not a free market. That's not healthy competition. What if I ran a small car company, I was making cars and only made 200? Well, I didn't get any money. General Motors got money. So I have some problems with some of the bailouts down there. Okay. On the cannabis, this is from the 5-minute forecast. Again, Igor Financial. I'm going to be careful here. Regulators, cannabis is a Schedule 1 drug. So not even quite sure I'm allowed to talk about it, but as a medicinal, not talking about the psychotropic version. He goes on to say, hundreds of millions and soon billions of people have or have access to the health-protecting properties of medical cannabis. Now, that is not substantiated. The potential is just getting started, so they say. However, in 2018, the FDA, so I think this is okay for me to say, approved the anti-seizure medicine Epidiolex, becoming the first ever federally approved drug formulated with cannabidiol, CBD, okay? Gosh, I pronounced that word when I did a film on this. Cannabidiol. I know that's wrong. Plus, as the November elections prove, half of the U.S. states now allow the use of medical cannabis. Medical cannabis, in his opinion, will be a huge driver of the marijuana market overall. It will help bring about more medical breakthroughs and cures for many diseases. So, you know, I can tell you that the cannabis stocks, right? Cannabis stocks have gone up and have gone down. They've gone all over the place with no discernible direction, in my opinion. And I have a caveat. Anytime there's a new market for something, you know, brand new, in my experience, when you get a brand new market of something, new, you know, magic elixir, all these companies come into it. Kind of like the mortgage business when mortgage rates are dropped to zero. All these companies come into it, and inevitably, there's going to be some malfeasance with some of these companies. They see money, and they have bad books or cook the books or whatever. And we've seen it in a lot of new industries. You know, they come in and there's, you know, like crypto, same thing. We saw some malfeasance. And we see everybody pile in, and then you might see these huge corrections. Additionally, when some of these new companies start making lots of money and their stocks go up, they issue more shares. All of a sudden, you got a stock that makes the new widget, elixir. And it's sitting at a dollar, runs to 10. And the company's VPs say, wow, it's up at 10. We could issue some more shares and cash in and make a lot of money here. And they do, and your stock gets hammered. So I'm very wary of anything new on the investing market. And I can say that applies to anything I've mentioned today. I'm wary. And all you have to do is look at a chart of crypto or look at a chart of some of the marijuana stocks, and you will see what I mean. You know, currencies are supposed to be stable as far as cryptos are concerned. They maintain their value. That's a characteristic of a good currency, is it maintains its value. That means up and down. So you can't have a currency that's, in my opinion, has valid characteristics of a currency if it triples in a month. Sure, it went up, but if you took that currency the first part of the month and now it's 30 times higher, you lost a lot of money because you might have exchanged a good for a particular currency for one crypto, and now you could have got 30,000 cryptos for it. So you gave away your goods for a currency that skyrocketed in value, and let's say it fell again. You have to be able to exchange your good or service for a monetary instrument like a currency and have both sides of the equation protected. If you traded goods for a currency and I got the currency and it went up 30 times, I made out like a bandit. But where'd that money come from? From the other end of the deal. So when I say stable, it means stable both up and down. And if you look at the chart for cryptos, you know, looks like the mania of the .com and the housing and ostrich eggs and the Mississippi Company and the tulip bulbs and all the other wild manias that have been in history. You can read a book called Mania and Crashes. It's a very good book. Okay, Dow down 592, we're almost at the close. So I'm not a fan of selling into a panic. I can tell you that, you know, this was kind of October and November, in my opinion, was not an all-out panic. In 1987, we saw something like a 30% drop in the market in one day. Now, that's a panic. That's a panic. But this was sort of like a medium-speed train wreck. I mean, there were days in October and November where they were, every day was 200-300 down. I mean, it was unrelenting. You know, just relentless, I guess you could say. And it continued, and it just was brutal. So these 400, 500, 600 point drops were just day after day. I mean, it was really, really a difficult environment for not only those that manage their own portfolio, but for those of us that manage others. You know, I have to adopt, and I adopt stops. That's what I got to do, and I have to behave to them, and I don't like to be stopped out, but you have to, because nobody knows where it's going to stop. You know, I saw portfolios in 08 and 09 that had lost 30, 40, 50, 50, 60%, depending on how leveraged they are. And that, to me, is an unacceptable amount of loss, to lose half. I mean, I met with a lot of people, and a lot of people with tears in their eyes. They wouldn't even open their statements. It was just terrible. I'm sure there were people that had heart attacks and marriages that were destroyed. And, you know, some probably put a gun to their heads. And it's just unacceptable. I have to have stops. You have to know when to leave. Like a casino, like a slot machine, you have to know when to get out. All right. So you have been listening to show 280. Is it over? And can I say I hope it's over? Well, yeah, I hope it's over. But as I mentioned early in the show, with lower stock prices, you can buy more stock with the money you have. And with dividend-paying stocks, if the dividend is paid, if the dividend is paid, it's not guaranteed, then the yields go up as the prices fall, if the dividend is maintained. Again, I will tell you, indices mentioned cannot be directly invested into. Dividends do not guarantee against losses, and dividends can be taxed in certain accounts. Dividends can be cut, eliminated, increased at any time. So they're not guaranteed. Okay, Money Matters is about money. As it is, right? But we all also do community matters. We talk about nonprofits and local businesses and events and things happening around the world around you. Because investing in community is an investment. Just like investing in your body, investing in your garden, investing in your house by painting it. These are all versions of investing. You can make your value of your house go up like a stock by making it in better shape. Or maybe your health by eating better. Or maybe your mind by reading more and educating yourself. So, okay, our website is moneymanagementradio.com. Everything is free there. Our way of saying thank you to listening to your community radio station. Our gift to you for listening to your community radio station, where you get all sorts of alternative music and news and things you don't hear on pay-for-play radio. So Money Matters is carried on a variety of stations, up to 65 stations throughout the nation, mostly the news. News airs here, I believe, at 6 p.m. and other times, depending on where you're listening to the show. If you'd like to comment on the show, you can send an email to the program director at the station, and they'll forward it to me. Remember, discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendation or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors, Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Indices mentioned are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Investing involves risk. Depending on the types of investments, there may be varying degrees of risk. Investors should be prepared to bear loss, including total loss of principal. Views expressed are my opinions only, or the opinions of the authors that I may have read or interviewed. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge's station and staff members or underwriters. That's it. A couple of minutes before 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, if you're listening to it live. That's it. Remember, money is not the most important thing. Your health, your family, your spirituality, what you do for your community, your happiness, your mental health is more important. After that, there's no harm in go making some money, right? God bless. Have a great day.